Hi, I'm Brianna Contreras, Associate Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive.
Hello, I'm Peter Werwein. I'm Senior Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive.
Welcome to MHE Talks, Improving Patient Access, a new podcast series part of our Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast from Managed Healthcare Executive.
Patient access is a challenge that everyone in healthcare seems to have been talking about for decades. It's one of those big tent problems of American healthcare. A topic that takes in everything from practical problems like transportation to a doctor's appointment, or maybe in today's telehealth era, spotty Wi-Fi. There are also financial barriers to access, such as high out-of-pocket costs, and structural barriers, such as deeply rooted healthcare disparities and racism.
Our new podcast, MHE Talks, Improving Patient Access, will feature healthcare leaders and executives who are working to pull down the barriers to patient access. The goal is to have a lively, informative conversation about a foundational issue in American healthcare.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to a new year, 2021. We're all hoping it's better than 2020. This morning, or now this afternoon, I have the honor and privilege of speaking to two very important healthcare leaders in this country. I'm speaking to Lloyd Dean. He is CEO of Common Spirit, which is a large healthcare system headquartered in Chicago, 142 hospitals. It is the product of an alignment between Dignity Health and Catholic Health Initiatives, a real powerhouse a healthcare system in the country. And we're also speaking to Dr. Valerie Montgomery Rice this afternoon, who is president of Morehouse School of Medicine in Atlanta, Georgia. And Morehouse is one of the four historically Black medical colleges in this country. So thanks for the time today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So the topic that we're discussing today is the lack of Black physicians in this country. I did a little bit of research this morning, and you folks have a program that you're going to be talking about. But you know, there's roughly 22,000 medical school applicants in the country every year, and only about 1,600 of those are Black Americans or Blacks. So 7.5%, and a small percentage are Black males, of roughly 600 or so. And so there's there are too few, disproportionately few Black Americans entering medical school. And that of course gets reflected in the workforce and the number of Black physicians. So I guess turning to you, Lloyd, I've sort of set the stage with some statistics, but I guess, although this may seem a slightly ignorant question, but maybe we just start out with, why is this an important issue? Why should we care about the number of Black physicians in this country?
This is a critical issue for the nation. And one that we have come together to set forth, we think, once and for all, a solution that can get at the heart and the core of the problem. So what is the problem? We have had on our discussion agenda in this country for decades the issue of racial and health disparities in the country. And at the heart of that problem has been a lack of physicians and clinicians of color, particularly in African American and Black communities. And this problem has really been magnified as the world and as this nation we've been dealing with COVID-19. We know that African Americans have experienced a disproportional number of deaths and positive cases and results resulting in hospitalizations. And at the core of that problem has been this lack of adequate Black and African American and physicians and clinicians of color.
So could I just ask you a couple of questions about that? There is a history, I believe, of affirmative action that was supposed to address some of this problem. Is this lack that it still exists in some sense a reflection of the lack of effectiveness of current affirmative action programs?
I think that's one factor, but I think we would not be being honest with ourselves if we didn't go to the beta level of the problem, which from my perspective has been institutional racism and its impact on communities and its impact on the healthcare sector. And while I think that affirmative action certainly has its positive outcomes, I don't think that for our discussion point, it was the solution for the root cause that has been an issue and a concern in this nation for decades.
And Peter, if I may add to that, when you look at the real challenge, there are 155 medical schools in this country. Yet the four historically Black medical schools, Morehouse School of Medicine, Charles Drew, which is partnered with UCLA, Howard University School of Medicine, and Meharry Medical College, we produce more Black physicians, and we produce more Black physicians in the last 10 years than the top 10 medical schools in this country. And that top 10 being defined as what the U.S. News Report reports as the top 10. Yet, when you look at, let's say over the last 10 years, there have been 15 new medical schools that have come about. Each of those schools had a mission in their mission statement, diversity and inclusion. You gave a number of 7.3% of the applicant pool or the matriculants being African American. Guess how much they moved the needle? 0.01%. So they did not move the needle, even though they enrolled over 3,000 more students in the seat. They did not move the needle. You also pointed out that there were 20,000 matriculants, I think you said applicants, but understand that there were
I meant matriculants. And
there were actually 900,000 applications, of which there were 53,000 unique persons applying for those submitting those 900,000 applications. So on average, a student will apply to about 16 different schools. And so when you get down to the point where you actually only have 1,600 African-Americans out of 22,000 matriculants, you then, and of that, about 600 of those are African-American males, African-American / Black males, you get to see that there is a systemic challenge with us meeting any type of goals that would align with us really appreciating the value proposition of diversity in the health professions. And so part of the reason why Lloyd and I, Common Spirit Health and Morehouse School of Medicine, see the urgency of what we're trying to do here in our partnership.
So Before we get into that partnership, I just want to ask one other sort of foundational question, just to establish a base of understanding, which is, it sort of gets back to my question, why do we need more Black physicians to address healthcare disparities? And not to jump in and answer my own question, but I think there is some evidence that Black physicians are more likely to serve in communities that are underserved, minority communities. So that's one aspect. But isn't it also true that there's now a large body of evidence that the actual care delivered between a Black physician and a Black patient is sort of qualitatively different, and in fact, perhaps better than a white physician and a Black patient? Or is it a question of maybe that people will take advantage of healthcare services more? I just want to unpack a little bit on what the nature of the problem is here.
So it's definitely an and. So each of those things that you said were important. And so let's just look first at, and I'll take it from a compliance perspective. There are several studies that show that when there is concordance with the provider and the patient, particularly a study out of California that looked at Black male patients and Black male physicians, there was a higher level of compliance with first, keeping their appointments, second, following the recommendations. Another aspect you would look at is quality of care as measured by outcomes. So there was a large study that was just published out of the state of Florida. And what it looked at was 1.5 million births over about a 15-year period of time. And what it showed was when there was concordance with the physician being Black and the baby being Black, there was a significant improvement in the mortality rate of what happened with that baby. When there was a white physician and a Black child, there was a 30% increase in mortality. Now, this was data that came out from an observational study that looked at 15 years. And so we know that that reflects that there is an impact on outcomes. And these were pediatricians, because when I first heard about this data, I was so alarmed, because I'm an OBGYN, and I'm thinking, okay, what is this about? And they looked at the data, and this actually was pediatricians. And now there's a lot that goes on in the delivery room between the obstetrician gynecologist and the pediatrician and the patient, right? And you have two patients you're dealing with. You're dealing with the mother, and you're dealing with the child. But you could not ignore 1.5 million births. And when you looked at whether it was a Black physician and a white baby, you did not see that increase in mortality. And so, of course, the state of Florida is looking into this even more. There are other studies that have looked at the outcomes in maternal mortality, whether there was concordance with the physicians, and other studies looking at hypertension, et cetera, hypertension outcome and other things, looking at medication. So you are correct. There's compliance, and then there's health outcomes. Now, this third point that you brought up about, it is true that physicians of color tend to practice in more underserved communities, more primary care specialties. And that is great. However, what we've also seen is this trend of them being relegated to primary care specialties and to underserved communities. And we see this pretty often in our students who are graduating from different medical schools, and they would want to go into specialties like surgery or plastic surgery or dermatology or emergency medicine. However, they are not given the opportunity to compete for those spots. So when Lori talked about the systemic barriers, those are those systemic barriers. And what we are hoping to do with our partnership is to address, yes, compliance, to improve outcomes, but to also give those students of color more choice, because we believe that there should be diversity across all specialties and all subspecialties.
And I could just add one other point. Yeah. Is that one of the things that is indisputable, and there have just been, loads and loads of studies that have affirmed the importance of trust as you look at the physician-patient relationship. And we know that if a patient feels comfortable, feel that culturally they're being understood, they can share, and that the clinician that they are interacting with understands who they are, where they are, and what some of their other than specifically what is being treated issues are, that if that is a relationship that reflects who they are, and they are dealing with a clinician that looks like them, that understands them, that they are more likely to access the system. And that we are seeing that playing out right now. You asked a question of us earlier about the vaccination. One of the things that has quickly surfaced is that it is the physician in their discussions with the patient that is the greatest indicator of whether one will move forward with the vaccination or not. So now align that with communities of color. Align that with Black communities, it only adds another layer of emphasis of having physicians and clinicians in communities of color that are reflective of the members of that community.
Yeah, I think so much goes on in the doctor-patient relationship, and if you see somebody across the room who is like you, and it's just, it reduces barriers of communication, and you just come into the relationship with a sense of trust and understanding. And to key off on your point, Dr. Rice, Dr. Otis Brawley is on our editorial board, and we've talked about cancer disparities. And so the notion that of having a diversity in specialties and oncology and cardiology and in surgery, where people see these people when they're in the greatest need of care in some sense, it makes it just, I just thought it was a very cogent point that you were making. So, but let's talk about your program and exactly what you're trying to accomplish here. You made the announcement in December, and the numbers that are sticky in my head is that this is a 10-year program. I think roughly $100 million are being allocated towards it. So I don't know who to turn to, Dr. Rice or Lloyd, but who wants to sort of, to people who haven't heard of the program, wants to sketch the program for us and what you're trying to accomplish?
Please, Dr. Ross.
Okay, so first of all, we are very excited. And we said 10 years, but we think it would take us 10 years to get to us to be fully at our capacity. But this is a much longer commitment from Morehouse School of Medicine and Common Spirit. And what we did was we recognized how much our missions aligned, and that we were both interested in ensuring that we increase the quality of care, access to care, and to diversify in the healthcare workforce, and really focusing on underserved communities and communities that sometimes have been in rural areas, in urban populations, but are underserved. And we knew that we were both committed to that. And we knew that there was a lack of Black physicians, Latinx physicians, and physicians coming from rural communities. And so what you will see is over the next 10 years, we will establish 5 regional medical campuses, Morehouse School of Medicine and Common Spirit regional medical campuses across the Common Spirit platform in one of the 21 states. And we will establish 10 residency training sites that will have no less than 3 different disciplines training at each of the sites. And so you will see Morehouse School of Medicine go from 100 medical students per year to over 200 medical students per year. Those students will spend their first 2 years at Morehouse School of Medicine, and then they will go to different campuses for their third and fourth year where they will have their clinical training. And then we hope that they will choose to come to our residency training spots that will be in 10 different locations across the country. Now, there may be some congruency between the 5 regional medical campuses and the 10 campuses for residency training, but we're going to be recruiting those students just like everybody else will be for them to choose our GME programs. And we know that we're going to focus on primary care. We know we're going to focus on critical core specialties like emergency medicine, radiology, surgery, OBGYN, psychiatry, those critical core areas where we see a disproportionate number of diseases that lead to health disparities in these underserved populations. So we're excited.
Are these 300 additional residency slots then in the Common Spirit system? 300 that did not exist before?
300 that did not exist before, yes.
And yeah. is this a first for Morehouse? You're in Atlanta and you're starting these regional medical school campi, I guess, plural. Is this the first time you've sort of left your Atlanta home and set up satellites?
No, we have a regional campus that we are starting in Columbus. Columbus, Georgia, which is about two years into that. And typically what you do, Peter, is you have a distributed model where you have medical students in their third year start to go and do fourth year electives. And so we will start that at Common Spirit locations this July. So in April, we will identify those 5 regions and start to identify those 10 GME regions. But we will have medical students start to go to Common Spirit locations in July to have fourth year elective or third year specialties so that we start to adapt and integrate Morehouse School of Medicine more so with the Common Spirit family.
And Peter, I would add that, you know, each of us have, you know, different relationships that, you know, extend, you know, beyond our current borders. We have something with Creighton, we have something with Baylor. But we're talking at a national scale here. We're talking addressing an issue that has lingered, and there have been incremental movement, but we're talking substantive, a national scope program that will get at the core, as we both said earlier, of a problem that has existed in this country and still does to date. And from the Common Spirit Health perspective, who better in this nation could we partner with? Who has served and placed and grown more Black physicians and clinicians than the Morehouse School of Medicine? So we were honored and humbled when they agreed to go hand in hand and form this partnership and to go on this journey that we think will be transformative for the nation. So this goes beyond what is good for Common Spirit Health and what is good for the Morehouse School of Medicine. But we believe that together, we will be the stimulus for solving a problem that has been historic. And we are very, very excited to be doing this with the Morehouse School of Medicine.
And I suppose you're looking forward to the day where, when it comes match day, that people will be very excited that they match into a residency at Common Spirit, not just the UCSFs and the Harvards and so on and so forth.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to Dr. Rice and I standing, at a exercise together in seeing those individuals who we've had a part of touching their lives, but more importantly, that will leave that stage and change lives in communities in this nation and help us correct a course that has been a difficult one for this nation.
And Peter, you can bet, so Peter, the residency training programs will be, have a shared governance model with Morehouse School of Medicine and Common Spirit. And so we will bring to Common Spirit, we will enhance what they already have, we believe, from a cultural competence perspective, because we are going to bring, I think, a more diverse population of providers, clinicians, educators, who are going to integrate with their already established models, because it's going to be bi-directional learning for both of us. And we should say tri-directional, because we are going to have a strong community focus. We will bring our pipeline expertise, and we will recruit students as early as from high school to our programs and latch onto them as they go through college, and then pull them into Morehouse School of Medicine, hopefully, and then really have them matriculate through our residency training program. Because we know that's the highest chance of somebody going back and practicing in that community. And imagine all the cultural influences that we will get to have from all of these diverse communities. We're gonna have communities that are in rural areas, urban underserved areas, rural underserved areas, other areas where you normally wouldn't necessarily see students who could think that they could go to medical school. That's what we've been able to successfully do in the state of Georgia. So we're going to replicate that in five other different regions. And the icing on the cake is really the GME programs, the 10 sites of the GME program, because that is what gets you to having specialty and subspecialty trained providers to go back and impact those communities.
And so, I would just say, Peter, we are hopeful that this will be a model for this nation. And while for obvious reasons that we've discussed, our focus for the immediate future is on fulfilling the need of Black clinicians and Black physicians. But we can see the next generation of this, other communities of color. And Dr. Rice and I talk about, all the time that our only limitation is our imagination. And we imagine big, but we want this to be a springboard that will address equal needs in other communities of color.
This has been really great conversation. I'm really excited for both of you. I'm excited for your institutions, and I'm excited for the country. It seems like this might actually start to work on a very serious problem in American healthcare. And I'm going to check back in a little while and see how it's going. I hope you both will get on the Zoom and we'll talk about your progress. So thanks so much for the time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening, and keep an eye out for the next episode of MHE Talks, Improving Patient Access. This podcast is a series part of our Tuning into the C-Suite podcast and can be found at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com, as well as on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Apple Podcasts.